Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Elena Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. This evening, we talk about our relentless search for high self-esteem that has become practically a virtual religion in our society. Our competitive culture tells us that we need to be special and we need to be above average to feel good about ourselves. However, we can't all feel above average all the time. There's always someone richer, more attractive, or successful than we are. And in this day and age when we sometimes we have been working for a company for 20 years and we find that we've lost our jobs. So things happen. My guest this evening is Dr. Kristen Neff, Associate Professor of Human Development at the University of Texas. And Dr. Neff has done some pioneering research in self-compassion. And she's developed an 8-week program to teach self-compassion skills. And she's the author of Self-Compassion. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Kristen Neff, who believes that self-compassion can lead to a more healthier and productive life than those who are self-critical and yearning for self-esteem. It is a pleasure to welcome Dr. Kristen Neff to WDIY.
Thank you, Ellie. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, I think you've developed a very interesting concept, and perhaps we haven't thought about it enough. We live in a day and age where, as I mentioned in my intro, that people are losing their jobs, and particularly if you're at a particular age. If you're in your 50s, it's like it's difficult to reconnect to the world. In the work world, people are no longer getting jobs that pay with pension and full-time. The companies are now looking for contractual work where they don't have to give benefits. And it becomes a very oppressive and anxious-provoking world. So how can self-compassion deal with all of that, Dr. Kristen Neff?
Well, if you think what self-compassion is, it's really relating to yourself as you would relate to a good friend when your friend was suffering. If your friend lost their job or your friend had their spouse leave them, you would naturally respond with kindness and care and try to comfort your friend. And so when we do that with ourselves, when we really need it, we can give ourselves the emotional support and encouragement and care that we need to get through a really difficult situation.
How did you become involved in this whole concept of self-compassion, Dr. Neff?
Well, I really learned first about self-compassion. It was my last year of graduate school at UC Berkeley, and I was going through a really difficult time. There was stress about finishing my PhD, and then if I did finish, would I get a job? And I had actually just gotten out of a divorce, which was pretty messy, and I had a lot of feelings of self-judgment related to that. So I thought I'd learn to meditate to help me deal with my stress. And surprisingly, the woman who was leading the meditation course talked a lot about the importance of giving yourself compassion, of being a good friend to yourself, a good support to yourself. And it was exactly what I needed to hear in that moment. It really was a life-changing moment for me. And almost immediately, I started trying at least to be kinder and more caring toward myself. And I just saw that it made a huge difference in my life.
Now, when we talk about self-compassion, what is the difference between self-compassion and the feelings that you were having about the difficulty of completing the dissertation? And there are self-critical comments. And how do we get ourselves to become less self-critical and more compassionate?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because, of course, the self-critic causes us a lot of pain. Often these voices are internalized voices of people in our childhood who maybe were very critical or unsupportive. But what's really important to develop more self-compassion is also to have compassion for your inner critic. You know, in other words, we don't want to beat ourselves up for beating ourselves up. And often the inner critic at some level is trying to help us or keep us safe. Right, you might criticize yourself for being lazy and never going to the gym. But at some level, your inner critic is trying to say, hey, you need to be healthier. You should go to the gym because you'll be, you know, feel better in your body. So it really starts in some ways by having compassion for our inner critic and the needs it's trying to meet. And then also, of course, including ourselves more generally. And we're just recognizing that we're human beings doing the best that we can and trying to support and care for ourselves when things are difficult.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned the inner critic. I remember once some time ago, I was on my way to a meeting and I was looking for my keys. And I could not find my keys. And I heard this voice in my head say, you think you're so smart? You went to college and you can't find your keys? How smart could you be? You spent all that time in college and you can't find your keys. And I heard this voice and I said to myself, I know that voice. And usually I would have bowed to it and become more down on myself and say, yeah, you're right. I'm stupid. I'm this. But this time I said, you know, I know that voice. Dad, that's you. And you want to be helpful. And you want to be loving. But you're being so critical, I can't stand it. So I know you love me. And I'm simply going to turn your voice down. And thank you for your love. But I needed to be quiet now. And what I did was turn the volume down so I couldn't hear it. And do you know what happened, Dr. Neff? I found my keys.
That is such a beautiful example of what it feels like and the experience of giving yourself compassion. What a relief.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was also, as you said, being I wasn't being angry with my dad and that critical voice. I was simply acknowledging it and saying, yeah, this is what I have to do to deal. I know you love me. And it's not that I don't love you. I'm simply turning your voice down. We'll talk later. And that was it.
Yeah, that's so key, that we don't want to reject and judge any part of ourselves, including the parts that are not very skillful in motivating ourselves, which is the inner critic. So, that's beautiful. And you're lucky because a lot of people aren't able to do that for themselves. Either they're scared, or they think they don't deserve kindness and compassion, or they just haven't had any good role models. But I also find that if people give themselves a chance, there is this inner compassionate self that can speak if we just get out of its way. Kind of like what you said, just turn the voice down a little bit on the inner critic, and then this other voice can emerge.
And that's the voice of kindness and self-compassion, which most of us are able to give to others, but
that's
find
right.
it most difficult to give to ourselves, especially when things don't go right. When things go right, we're okay. It's when things are difficult or not meeting up to our standards or we're disappointed, then it's difficult to give ourselves the self-compassion, which you so beautifully describe in your book, Self-Compassion.
Yeah, and one of the things that self-compassion does is as you say, if something difficult happens or maybe you fail or you lose your keys or something more serious, there's a sense that something has gone wrong, as if normal should be perfect, everything's going really well, and then when something isn't going well, something has gone wrong. This is abnormal. This shouldn't be happening. And it's that feeling of should, that it shouldn't be happening, that it's abnormal, that actually makes us feel so isolated and cut off from other people. But in fact, that is normal. You know, things go wrong all the time. People lose their keys. People lose their jobs. And so when we're kind to ourselves and remember that this is part of life, we can actually feel more connected to people.
My guest this evening is Dr. Kristen Neff, Associate Professor of Human Development at the University of Texas. And Dr. Neff is the author of a very special book called Self-Compassion. And Dr. Neff, tell me, how can we get out of the rut of this self-critical place and move into more of a place of self-compassion?
Well, the first one actually is to notice how you're suffering from your own self-criticism or your sense of isolation when things aren't working. You know, often it's crazy. Often we're so lost in fixing our problems or in judging ourselves, thinking that we'll fix our problems. We don't tune in to the fact that we're hurting. And once you are aware of the fact that you're hurting and in need of a kind response, then your heart can open and again, respond to yourself just like you would to a good friend who who told you the difficulty they were going through. And it actually, we know how to be compassionate. We're very well practiced. Most of us know what to say to a child or someone we love, what we can do to encourage, support them, let them know we care. So it just requires giving ourselves permission and also remembering to treat ourselves the same way when we're hurting.
Now, does it also mean that we have to acknowledge what we're feeling? So very often when we are in a down position, we don't always identify or acknowledge that I'm really feeling disappointed in myself. We are just so angry, and so that we know we're feeling down, but we don't seem to have the capacity to identify exactly what we're feeling. Is this important in developing self-compassion?
Yeah, well, it's certainly important to be willing to acknowledge that you're in pain. Right, we don't like to acknowledge that. It's that we'd rather avoid it or try to fix it immediately to make it go away. But just as if you saw a homeless person on the street and made you feel uncomfortable, so you didn't even look at that homeless person, you couldn't respond with kindness and compassion. And it's the same with ourselves. We need to be able to notice when we're in pain. Now, it's helpful if you know the particular flavor of pain. Is it anger or is it anxiety or is it, you know, self-judgment? But it's actually not absolutely necessary. What is necessary, though, is to say, hey, I'm really going through a hard time. This is really hard. What I need is some tenderness, some kindness. And you need that awareness to be able to respond to yourself like you would to a good friend.
So what you're saying is we need to develop a different way of talking to ourselves and acknowledging ourselves the way we would do to a friend.
That's right. And it does take some work because we're breaking a habit. We're breaking a habit that we learned in childhood. We're breaking a habit that our culture consistently reinforces. And so in some ways, self-compassion is a radical act. You're choosing to end the suffering, to say, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. I want to turn down the volume, as you said, so I can give myself what I need in the moment. But what I find, I teach a lot of people how to be more self-compassionate. And we're a lot more capable of it than we might think.
And what we really need to do is to understand that we are capable and to see how that impacts on our personal relationships. Very often when we become involved in self-criticism, we forget that it impacts our relationship as well. So when we come back, we're going to talk about how to develop the skills that are important in developing self-compassion and enabling us to take charge of our lives when we return to WDIY.
You're listening to WDIY, Community Public Radio for the Lehigh Valley. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening, we're talking about a very interesting subject with a very interesting guest. My guest is Dr. Kristen Neff, Associate Professor of Human Development at the University of Texas. And she has done some pioneering research in self-compassion and has written a book called Self-Compassion. And we were just talking about the differences between self-compassion and self-criticism. And we're all very good at self-criticism, aren't we, Dr. Neff?
Oh, yeah, we're very well practiced.
And we seem to be able to be comfortable with that. Oh, and as you mentioned earlier in the program, we're very good at the I should've, I could've, I would've.
Yes.
And that interferes with our ability to take in a process of seeing the whole problem. Can you tell us how that impacted on your own life?
Yeah, well, just give a very personal example. My son has autism. And when he was first diagnosed, I had been practicing self-compassion for about 7 years.
How old was he when he was diagnosed, Dr. Neff?
He was 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
And when this happens, when your child is diagnosed with some sort of special needs child, When this happens, when your child gets diagnosed with some issue like autism, there are all these feelings that naturally come up, feelings like disappointment, maybe even some grief at the loss of the dream of what this child would be and your relationship with this child would be. And often we feel we shouldn't be feeling that it's self-pity, that all our focus should be on our child and helping our child. And there's also some guilt. I mean, how in the world could I be feeling disappointment toward the child I love more than anything else in the world? And it's this belief that we shouldn't be feeling this that keeps us locked in the feelings. We can't really get over them because we aren't letting them express themselves. And so what I found is I just let myself feel everything that came up, whether I thought I should or shouldn't. I just allowed myself to feel it. And I gave myself great love for how hard it was.
So you
and
gave
what
yourself...
I found, I gave myself love and really support. You know, I'm kind of mushy with myself. Oh, poor darling, this is so hard. This is so hard. I'm really here for you. I'm really here to support you. And what I found is when I did that, I was able to much more quickly open to my own feelings, give myself the support I need, and then turn my full attention to giving my son the love, the acceptance, the care, the support that he needed. So when we open our hearts to ourselves, then our hearts are open and our hearts are available to other people. And I've seen that so powerfully with my relationship with my son. I'm such a better mother than I would have been if I didn't, have the ability to be kind to myself.
And I think that's the important thing. It's opening yourself to all of your feelings, but without condemnation, but with acceptance and with a positive positive acceptance that this is where you are, this is what you're feeling. And once you are able to be kind to yourself, you found you were able to be kind to your son.
Yes, yes, absolutely. A lot of people have this mistaken belief that self-compassion is selfish. But in fact, if you think about it, it's really a lot of self-criticism that's so self-centered. If I'm, beating myself up for not being a good mother, I'm not thinking about my son. But by accepting my experience, and again, this process of giving yourself the emotional support and care that you need when you're struggling, we need that love, we need that care, we need to know that we got our own back.
Dr. Neff, there's something very important here in this concept. We're used to thinking and looking at this compassion from other people. We're used to looking for it, if we're feeling low, we're used to looking for it from our loved one in our life, from a partner, from a husband, from a family member. We're used to seeking it from others to pour our hearts out to. But what you're saying is we need to be our own, the person that we pour our hearts out to is ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's a different conception.
It is. And, of course, it's wonderful when your partner can be there for you and be this compassionate, supportive presence. But, it's not always possible. There might be a conflict you're having or your partner might be going through some difficulty in their own life. And so, but what happens is we feel I should be getting the support from my partner. It's the only source of support I have. And I'm pissed off when he doesn't give it to me, right? And so when we give ourselves compassion, it's not like we're saying, I don't need the love and support of others, but we're meeting a lot of our own needs so we aren't so dependent on others, and therefore we aren't so upset when we don't get exactly the response. We get, if I feel I need some love right now, and you aren't at a place where you can give it to me, well, I can give that to myself, and therefore I can be more available to you and not be so demanding. In fact, there's research that completely supports that people who are more self-compassionate are much better relationship partners. They're more intimate, they're more caring, they're less controlling. I don't have to control my partner if I'm giving myself a lot of the support I need. Then I can just love my partner for who he is.
And that's very important. How did this knowledge and discovery affect you in your own relationship, perhaps with your own husband?
Yeah, well, it helped so much, and it also helped that, my husband was also on board with self-compassion. In fact, we ended our marriage vows with the vow to help each other be more self-compassionate. It was really something that we both valued. And so what we do, for instance, Let's say we were in an argument. And this didn't always happen. I mean, sometimes you just aren't very present. But when one of us could remember, we used to call it the take a self-compassion break. In other words, take a little time out, and each of us would give ourselves kindness, like, oh, this is so hard, I'm so angry, I'm so frustrated. We wouldn't be immediately looking for that from each other. And then when we came back, it was just so much easier to have communication and to really get more to the issue, because we had that support that we needed from ourselves. It's really remarkable. When we didn't remember to do it, things were really tough. And when we did remember to do it, it was so much easier.
So when you and your husband parted company, you made a vow to have self-compassion for one another.
No, sorry, this is my second husband.
Oh, your second husband. Oh, sorry.
I should have made that clear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Right, so when we had our marriage vows, we made this commitment to try to help each other be more self-compassionate.
Well, I was just thinking how interesting that would be for a divorcing couple to have that ability to have self-compassion so they could be better relate to one another even though they weren't living together and become better parents.
And absolutely. There's also actually research on that. They found that how self-compassionate you are when you go through a divorce is by far the single strongest predictor of how well you cope with your divorce, and again, how well you get along with your ex, and which is so important for the kids. So being able to, again, not only give yourself compassion and understanding, but to give other people compassion and understanding for not being perfect, it enhances our relationship so much, and it just allows us to cope. And life's hard, and we need to be able to cope.
Life is very hard. You know, it sounds like if you are compassionate with yourself, that you're more able to have compassion for others, and you don't always have to be, quote-unquote, right all the time.
That's right.
You can have...
Could I just give another example?
Yes.
What I found in my own marriage is that when I was self-compassionate, I just recognized, hey, it's human to make mistakes. It was so much easier to own my BS, right? To be able to say, hey, you know, I really was out of line. It wasn't okay what I said, and I'm so sorry. In other words, there was no fear of admitting that I had made a mistake, because I knew I wouldn't judge myself and criticize myself if I admitted it. You know, so often we blame other people because we can't handle the self-criticism that will follow if we admit that, hey, we messed up. So self-compassionate people are much more likely to apologize, to take responsibility for what they've done, to try to repair ruptures in relationships. It's really remarkable.
Now,
the ability to see the truth.
Dr. Neff, if people wanted to learn more about self-compassion, do you have a website that they can look at? And how would they be able to connect with that website?
Yeah, if you just Google the word self-compassion, it will come up, but the website is selfcompassion.org. And I've really tried to make it a free resource. I've got videos about self-compassion. I have guided meditations to help you develop self-compassion. I have exercises. And I have hundreds at this point of research articles on self-compassion. So it should be a very good resource for people.
We have just a few moments left, Dr. Neff. How does self-compassion help a veteran who's coming home with such vivid memories, and he is suffering with the post-traumatic stress syndrome? How does that help him in coping?
It's a powerful predictor of the ability of vets to cope with their experience. Again, they had all this trauma exposure. They have all this guilt about the things that they had to do. And to be able to respond to that with kindness and care and not self-judgment, it's actually self-compassion is a stronger predictor of developing PTSD than how traumatic their combat exposure was. I was talking to a group of vets once and teaching them skills of self-compassion. And I was worried they would think it was hearts and flowers stuff and, like, throw me out of the room. And they responded so well. It was like, wow, this is what I need. It was so beautiful to see these men who had gone through that actually open their hearts to themselves a little bit. And so a lot of Veterans Administrations now are teaching vets self-compassion, which is just so exciting.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Kristen Neff, Associate Professor of Human Development at the University of Texas and the author of Self-Compassion, for helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding that self-compassion steps in at the moment when we are feeling down, when we have lost a job, when we have failed to get a promotion, when we've had an argument in our relationship. Thank you for helping us to understand that self-compassion encourages us to get up and try again, that far from encouraging self-indulgence, self-compassion helps us to see ourselves clearly and make needed changes because we care about ourselves and we want to reach our full potential. Thank you again for helping us to take charge of our lives with self-compassion. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.